This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 218 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is sponsored by BarkBox. Now, BarkBox is subscription service for dogs and those who love them. Every month, BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences.
And what I love about the toys that we get from BarkBox is that these aren't toys that you're going to see anywhere else. So these are going to be things that are unique, and for heavy chewers, they are durable.
And the ultra cool thing is that all edibles that come in BarkBox are made in the USA or Canada, and 100% of their products are tested on animals, their own.
I've yet to find a treat that has been turned down by this dog.
Another cool thing about BarkBox is that they have a monthly theme, and these include things like Country Fair, Bark Ball, Pooh York City, and Brooklyn Hipster.
The most recent one that I got was Back to School, and it was all college themed. And one of them looked like a red Solo cup, like a plush red Solo cup full of squeaky ping pong balls with faces on them. So it was like beer pong for puppy toys. Was very cute. And one was it looked like a frat guy, and you shook it and it made funny noises.
Scout's honor, if your dog does not like something in the box, they'll send you something they'll love for free, because they're all about dog happiness.
And one of the other great things about it is that, let's say that they have, because these are toys and treats you can't find everywhere else, let's say that you fall in love with, or your dog falls in love with for that matter, one of the toys or one of the treats, and you can't find them elsewhere, you can reorder them at any time through the app.
So for a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/Outlander when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan.
When you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan, you will get an extra month of BarkBox for free when you go to www.barkbox.com/Outlander.
In this episode of the Outlander podcast, we do something a little bit different. We are bringing you two wee interviews. The first is with Mr. Loch Ness himself, Willie Cameron. He speaks with us about the Loch Ness Knit Fest coming up next weekend, November 13th through 15th. We are thrilled to welcome to this episode of the Outlander podcast Mr. Willie Cameron, who is one of the directors of the Loch Ness Knit Festival, a businessman, and also known as Mr. Loch Ness. Mr. Willie Cameron, welcome to the Outlander podcast.
Thank you very much indeed. It's absolutely my pleasure to be able to speak to you today.
Welcome. So I have to ask before we go any further, of course, you have to explain Mr. Loch Ness.
Well, my domicile is on the shores of Loch Ness, and my business is based, again, on the shores of Loch Ness, and I have a great love for this amazing stretch of water. And I have a connection because my late father had the longest sighting on record in June 1965 of seeing something very strange on the surface of the water. And that night there was another 9 people saw it. So it's regarded as one of the iconic sightings of all time of that very elusive lady they call Nessie, or the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, fantastic. Would your father be the one who is known from that black and white photo?
No, that's the surgeon's photograph. That was done slightly before. That was done in 1934, that particular picture, which in 1994, 60 years later, was announced it was a hoax, complete hoax. It was a plasticine head on a toy submarine. Saying that apart, Loch Ness has a tremendous fascination for people all over the world. It's 24 miles long, 750 feet deep, and attracts over 1 million visitors a year, and is worth in excess of £40 million to the local economy. So it is a great draw as far as Scotland, and it's a great fascination for people.
I've had the pleasure of being there a number of times. I studied in Scotland at St. Andrews, in University of St. Andrews, many years ago. And on our first reading week, my first reading week, I was kind of brand new. So I had friends, but I was, you know, I didn't want to assume anything. So I just took a trip by myself and I went up to Inverness. It was myself the first time. And I just spent a few days there in a hostel and did the Davy the Ghost tour and at one night.
Oh, yes.
and did, of course, the tour on the loch. And oh my gosh, it is that river walk along the loch in Inverness is stunning.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I know Davy the Ghost as well. He now operates in Edinburgh.
Oh my gosh.
He now does ghost tours in Edinburgh. He's still to the fore, and you can meet him on the Royal Mile. He's got an old telephone box, police box on the Royal Mile where he conducts his tours from, and he sells tickets for his Davy the Ghost tours.
Oh my gosh, he was fantastic. Okay, so you're setting us up well for our discussion of the Knit Festival, because you've laid out just how important the river and thus its tourism is to that area.
Tourism is extremely important, and on the back of tourism, you get people with all sorts of interests and all sorts of hobbies, etc., that want to come to an iconic area like this, hence the reason that the Loch Ness Knit Fest fits in very, very well to the geography of the area. Plus the fact that historically, wool is very important as far as the Highlands are concerned in the history of the Highlands, because the people were put out during the Great Clearances and sheep were put in because sheep was the commodity of the day, like oil has been the commodity and data is the new commodity of the next century. Wool was the commodity of that particular period of the 19th century. So what we're doing now is redressing the fact, and we're taking the wool back in, but we're also bringing the people back in after they were tragically moved off the Highlands at one time during the Great Highland Clearances.
So tell us a little bit about that in a symbolic fashion, in that you literally are dealing with wool, but do you bring people back, as in you bring people back to the area for the festival, or are you involved with resettling?
No. It's purely for the festival. It is symbolic more than anything else as far as that is concerned. Hence the reason, and the fact that knitting, as far as a genre is concerned at the present moment on a global basis, is gone right up there in the last 10 years. It's become really, really popular, and lots of people are getting engaged with it purely from the fact that it's extremely relaxing. You can do it anywhere, and it's almost like a mindfulness thing, that it gives you time to think to yourself and time to concentrate and then be a wee bit more creative as far as your designs, etc. is concerned. So it is very, very much a genre of the 21st century in a location that is extremely adaptable to people coming into the area. It caters for tourists anyway. And you've got all the other additional things like the scenery, cruises on Loch Ness, whiskey tasting, the food, the drink of the Highlands. So it works out very, very well indeed. And that's really what the whole ethos behind this particular idea was that I came across 2 years ago in 2015.
Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you become involved in the industry, either in the festival industry or in the fibre industry?
Right. I'm not directly involved in the fibre industry. I'm more involved in marketing, tourism, events, food and drink, music, and a bit of writing and art. Now, I was invited to speak at a conference in 2015 on the island of Arran. And it was called the Coldwater Islands Conference. And it was the bringing together of people from island communities in the Northern Hemisphere to exchange ideas relative to what they're doing for the economic benefits of their areas, for tourism, for employment, etc., creativity. And during that conference, I went to one of the lectures done by a lady called Christelle Seyfarth, from an island called Fano in Denmark. And she told us great stories. She was a designer, a knitting designer, and she told a great story about a festival that she held on this very small island of a population of 3,000 people on the west coast of Denmark. and how successful it had been to starting off with about 600 people and then really rising to phenomenal numbers of about 10,000 people came to our festival over a period of 10 years. And on speaking to her and her husband, Jorgen, I thought, well, this is amazing. There's a lot of people who knit in the Highlands of Scotland and the Islands of Shetland, the Western Isles, the Harris Tweed. And I thought the synergy between what she was doing in Denmark and what we could do in the Highlands of Scotland, I decided to look into it a bit further and to see if it was at all possible that we could hold a festival similar to what she does in Denmark, in Inverness and under the brand Loch Ness Knitface.
When did it start?
Well, last year was the very first year that we had the Loch Ness Knitfest in Inverness, and this is the second year. The first year it was run by the tourist organisation Inverness Loch Ness, but this year it is a separate entity, Loch Ness Knitfest, and Crystal Seyfarth has become a director, and Cecilia Grigger of Planet Scotland, who was the main organiser of the festival last year, has taken ownership, along with myself as an advisor and a consultant to it, relative to the profile that I have and the network of people that I know throughout the country is concerned, along with our one of Cecilia's business associates, Katie Masheter, who has really been the mainstay as far as the organisation of this particular festival this year is concerned.
Tell me about what your role is now that you've done your job to help create it. What is your role coming into, say, a year out, 6 months out, a month out? What is your role currently with the festival?
Well, my role with the festival is that I will be front of house as far as the face of the festival is, to a certain extent, relative to telling them stories. We've got a Highland Feast at the Mercure Hotel on the 14th. Saturday the 14th, after the main day at the venue, and I will be able to tell stories from the Highlands, tell the Loch Ness story, just to really educate the people and give them a wee bit of extra knowledge to come to the area. They're coming to the area relative to their hobby, to their craft, to their business even, and this is a bit of more or less relaxez-vous, as they say. And I'm also taking them on a cruise down Loch Ness, a knitting cruise where they can sit and knit on the wonderful waters of the lake with the scenery and have a wee dram, a little whiskey, and just generally be there to supply information, any references, research, or anything anybody wants to know out with their own genre as far as knitting is concerned. I'm not a knitter myself, and I don't profess to be. I've given it a try, not very successfully, but I am there to give the add-ons. There's plenty of people there. We've got some great, great talent from all over the world relative to knitting, design, patterns, colours, techniques. And I'm just there to give the local flavour. I'll be wearing the kilt and I'll be able to speak about various things in history, the Jacobite period, the whiskey, the food and drink of the Highlands, the people of the Highlands, and a bit of storytelling. So it's really to give a bit of the cultural add-on to the genre that is knitting.
So tell our listeners what they might be able to expect. You've described things that you will be involved in, and you've mentioned a number of things such as experts in the field of knitting in a different genre. When is the festival and what might someone expect? Paint a picture for us about all the different things that might be available to the beginning knitter or the lifetime knitter.
Right. There's stuff for everybody, no matter what standard you are at as far as your knitting prowess is concerned. There's workshops, presentations, there's fashion shows, there's a knitting cruise, there's a marketplace, there's a crafting village. And as I say, we have got some of the greatest talent available that we could afford, because we don't have an awful lot of money to splash out. But we have Crystal Seyfarth herself, one of the top European designers, will be there with some of her products, and she's doing masterclasses. We've got the knitwear designer, Chrissy Day. We've got the fastest knitter in the world, Hazel Tyndall from Shetland. We've got from the United States of America, Kyle Kunick, from a San Francisco designer. We've got Sarah Berry from England, Lucy Haig. All these names will be very, very well. Carrie Westerman from Scotland. All these names are very well known to the people who are involved in the knitting fraternity on a global basis. They are the superstars. They are the pop stars. They are the celebs of the knitting world. And they will be doing masterclasses. They will be doing people with wanting to know new techniques. There's the Faroese shawls, the Faroe Islands to the north of Scotland. There's Dorset button making. It's just so wide. The best thing, rather than going in and boring your listeners with all the just me reeling off details, at our website www.lochnessknitfest.com, they'll see what the workshops, the presentations. But even for somebody starting off, there's going to be very, very basic. Also, the fact is they're going to get the under one roof. There are going to be over 40 vendors who are supplying the latest of yarns, the best of colours. Various things for techniques, patterns. It's a cornucopia of everything to do as far as knitting and the whole craft of knitting is concerned, with some of the greatest talent that we could afford to bring to Loch Ness for it. So it's a one-off. Under the one roof, everybody is going to be there, and there's going to be leisure time. It's not just workshops and presentations. There's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a ceilidh. We're going to listen to the great Bruce McGregor, who is of the band Blazing Fiddles, a world-renowned musician. We've got the Highland Feast. We've got the cruise on Loch Ness. It's so varied over the space of Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's just a great opportunity.
So it sounds like there's a lot to do and a lot to welcome people, whether they are hardcore knitters just starting out or just have an interest and want to find out what the heck is this all about.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And even if people are not, even if they're not knitters, come along anyway. Come along and see what it's all about. See what is attracting people all over the world to sit back and get the pins out and start knitting. It's bordering now on the stage that it's regarded almost like mindfulness, that it's such peace, solitude, without being any commercial, no pressure for you. It is just such a relaxing thing to do in like-minded company. You're meeting people from, I think last year we had 23 different nationalities from all over the world coming under the one roof. So you're going to meet people from other countries, see what they're doing, what's trending, and just make new friends.
When is the festival?
Festival is the 13th of October, the 14th of October, finishing on the 15th of October at the Ice Rink in Inverness, which is right next to the Archive Centre and right next to the Botanic Gardens, just beside the river that you were talking on. And it's, you know, if they want to chill out, they can walk along through the Ness Islands, along the riverbank, past Eden Court Theatre and into the centre of the town. And now our castle in Inverness is open. They have a viewing gallery in the tower, so they can spend some time just wandering up to the Castle Hill, going up the tower and looking over the whole landscape that is Inverness, a very, very famous town with the river running through the centre of it. As you know, when you were over yourself to see it, it's a beautiful little, now a city.
If someone wanted to become involved, like obviously we're speaking, you're speaking predominantly to potential attendees. Is there the opportunity to volunteer? And if it's too late this year, what's the process like for next year?
Well, as far as volunteers are concerned, if somebody wants to come over and spend their holidays to volunteer to do something, the girls at Planet Scotland, Katie and Cecilia, will easily have a place for them to do anything. We are putting out a call for volunteers to, you'll certainly get a little job to do. And the other thing too, as far as the fans of Outlander are concerned and the great stories that have been written by Diana relative to the whole series and the television, we're only 20 minutes away from Culloden Battlefield and the Clava Cairns, and the whole history of the Jacobites is very, 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 very strong in this area. So even people who think they might have some Scottish connection, we're next to the Archive Centre. It's a very big open invitation. We'd be delighted to meet people from your listeners. And also they can get more information. There's the mausoleum up at Kirkhill. the Claver Cairns, as I said, the Standing Stones. There's the Corrimony Chambered Cairn. The history that is involved in this area is something you could spend another... Last year, we had a lot of people spending another 2 or 3 days after the festival was over to travel over to the island of Skye, to travel up the Western Highlands, to take a ferry over to the Outer Hebrides where they make Harris Tweed, the potential, or even up to the Shetland Isles where or the Faroe Islands. The potential, it's a great, great base to be in, and you can do so much over a period of time.
Well, it sounds like what you described other attendees had done last year, as you said, to stay a few more days and go to some of these sites that are related to or known for their wool or knitting. It sounds like there's a potential tour.
There's no doubt about it. You could come 2 days before the festival, spend time at the festival, and have another 2 or 3 days afterwards. And we have access to, even through my own business, we have 4 hotels overlooking, with 2 of them overlooking Loch Ness, great places to stay. And we could put any of your listeners in touch with people that will do private tours, will do tours for parties of small parties, groups of 12. And they do the Outlander tours anyway. There's a WOW Travel, a company that we deal with, do tours to all the Outlander sites relative to what's in the literature.
Anyone, as you said, just look at the map. Anyone who has seen a map of Scotland, let alone who has been there, knows that Inverness is not only the capital of the Highlands, the gateway to the Highlands. It is truly centrally located to see all of these things that you've described, whether it's getting to islands or touring the Highlands. I mean this in a positive way. As far as researching things, it's like almost Jacobite Central as far as wanting to...
That's a great way to put it, as far as Jacobite Central is concerned. And the fact is that Inverness, historically, its strapline has been in the Gaelic language for many years. It's Ceil mí le fáilte, which is 100,000 welcomes. Ceil mí le fáilte in Gaelic is 100,000 welcomes. So that is the message that's been put out by the city of Inverness. That is the message Loch Ness Knit Fest is putting out. And it's the strapline as far as the whole of this area is concerned. To anybody that wants to come here, 100,000 welcomes. We will do our very, very best to entertain you and give you a memorable, memorable experience beyond your expectations in both the knitting festival, the culture of the area, the food and the drink, and the people.
The Loch Ness Knit Festival, the second annual, will be October 13th, 14th, and 15th in Inverness. And to find out more, Willie, the best place to go is the website?
www.lochnessknitfest.com.
And if someone had specific questions, is it easy to find someone to contact there, or is there a separate email address that we should be giving out?
ask@lochnessknitfest.com. ask@lochnessknitfest.com. And if you direct it to Katie, K-A-T-I-E, Masheter, M-A-S-H-E-T-E-R, and she knows everything Knitfest. She knows everything as far as the culture of the Highlands is concerned, and she's got a great, great network of contacts, and she knows me very well.
Is it too soon to get a little teaser about next year, or do you have to get through this year first?
We'll get through this year first. Hold on at the present moment in time. It's the old adage, just watch this space. And please come back to us and we'll be able to give you a rundown on how it went.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
13th, 14th, 15th of October. And by the way, if any of your listeners, not just as far as knitting is concerned, if they want to know about the Loch Ness Monster, if they want to know about the food and drink of the Highlands or anything cultural relative to the Outlander stories, we will do our utmost to be able to supply them with the information required.
I can't wait to share this with our listeners. It sounds fascinating. And although I think even as I can't say non-knitter, because actually I do knit, but not often and not enough. But I learned earlier this summer, and I hope that I haven't forgotten it. But my point is, I did it just long enough to begin to see how meditative it could be.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite part, besides doing just a few little rows, it was nothing fancy, or one row, actually, one really long row. The best thing I loved is that besides the action of it, I loved going to the store and picking out the most beautiful yarn that I could find.
That's extremely important. And it's not just for the benefit of the people who are coming. We are also involved in doing a bit of charitable work as well, and we've been concentrating on a very interesting charity this year too, where we've been knitting for that particular charity. We've had people knitting all over the country to supply hats and gloves and jumpers and everything else for people who are less fortunate than ourselves.
Especially going into a Scottish winter.
And especially going into a Scottish winter, you're dead right. You're dead right. Although the weather here, it's the start of the autumn at the present moment in time. The colours are absolutely magnificent, and it's our fall, and the weather is a little bit chilly, but the sun's shining, and last year the weather was just brilliant. The cruise on Loch Ness was lovely and glorious sunshine, and as I say, the colours on the trees, even for that alone, just to come and spend some time in the Highlands of Scotland with the magnificent autumnal shades is an experience in itself.
Oh, and that was exactly the time many years ago when I first came to Inverness and did that cruise and did the river walk. It was the Ness Walk. It was amazing. And it was just around all the fall colors. It's beautiful all year round, but you can't find a more beautiful time.
And I just hope with our conversation today, I have maybe brought back a little bit of a memory for your memory book on that wonderful experience you had here in Inverness all these years ago.
Absolutely. And I've been back since.
Next time you come back, you'll have to contact us and I'll give you a personal guided tour of the area to some of the things you might not have seen on your original trips.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Willie. Mr. Loch Ness.
I trust that was satisfactory for your listeners.
Oh, absolutely. Surely it was. And can't wait to share this. And you guys, if you are one of our Scottish listeners, please, please make a beeline for this amazing festival. And even if you're not into knitting and it's not your thing, go so you can come back and report to us because we want to hear about it. And if you are American or anyone actually not living in Scotland already, not planning on being there, but you're not there already, but planning a trip. And, or if you're even on the fence about a trip, the autumn is a great time because it's a lot fewer, except for maybe the Knit Festival. The tourism is, it's not as busy as it is, say, in Edinburgh with the Fringe in August. So it's not as crazy. It's not as really as cold as it is in December and January, but it is one of the most gorgeous times of year.
That's true.
Thank you so much, Mr. Cameron, for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. And I trust your listeners will enjoy the story about Loch Ness Knit Fest, how we found out about it, how we got there. And please do come back and we'll tell you how we got on.
Absolutely. You can't wait to hear.
Our second chat is with Sarah Louise Kelly, who works with McGregor and Macduff. She tells us all about how Scotland won her heart after a move to the country as a teen, and of course, the wonderful work of this well-known Scottish company. The Outlander podcast is thrilled to welcome Sarah Louise Kelly from McGregor and Macduff. Welcome, Sarah. How are you doing this morning or this afternoon?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. So we wanted to talk to you about the extremely interesting and detailed, just all of the stuff that they have, the store that you work for or the company that you work for, and that is McGregor and Macduff. So we're very keen to hear about not just the company, but as well as how you came to be working with the company. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with the company and in the fiber art industry?
Absolutely. So I am the content marketing for McGregor and Macduff. I work in-house and I've worked in marketing for around 7 years, but it was always sort of, a lot of my clients were sort of uninteresting or maybe like, I didn't really see much creative license with them, to be honest. And I wanted a company with a little bit of history, and I'm not actually Scottish, I'm from Liverpool, but I have lived in Scotland for half of my life and I wanted to work somewhere that was all about Scotland, to be honest, because I'm such a big fan of Scotland. And I saw an advert saying that you needed to be enthusiastic about Scotland, you needed to be enthusiastic about kilt making and Highland wear, and you needed to be good at marketing. And I ticked all of those boxes. So I've been with McGregor and myself for 18 months now. And it has been pretty interesting. I have worked in the warehouse where the kilt warehouse, where the kilts and all of our accessories are made. Also where the rest of our accessories arrive. I also spend a lot of time speaking to our customers about why they shop with us, why they chose us for their wedding day, which is huge.
What would someone who is coming to McGregor and McDuff for their wedding day, what types, obviously there's the kilt, there's accessories, all kinds of things that they could go in for. What, in your experience, do you find the most common for couples, or if it is just the groom, for wedding parties, what do you find that they purchase most commonly?
So they, at McGregor and McDuff, we have 4 exclusive tartans that were created by us. You can only buy them with McGregor and McDuff. And they usually go for our Iron Navy outfit. And couples tend to, I think most wedding couples that I speak to now, buy hand fasting ribbon for the ceremony.
Oh.
And that's available in all of the tartans that we have. I think we offer over 1,000 tartans. So it can be fully handmade for you.
I was thinking, okay, the tartans, maybe an aerosade, anything and everything that you might be able to get in a tartan, made of a tartan fabric. I was thinking all of that. I never would have thought of hand fasting. That's fantastic. Is it something that, I mean, I know it's a Scottish, it's pretty ancient and it's a Scottish tradition, but do you know, is this something that is like seeing a resurgence, or it's just been popular, those ribbons, those ties, since you've been there?
I actually do think there's been a resurgence. I think it's a Celtic tradition and pagan as well. But it is seen within Scotland as a Scottish tradition, especially if you get one in your family tartan. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And it does seem to have had a complete resurgence, and people do it for different reasons. So the original reason isn't always the reason that couples will do it. Sometimes, like, it's a nice thing that couples do that I really like is if they are both from completely Scottish families, they will get their 2 tartans and put them together in the ribbon, and then they use that for the ceremony, which I find that really, really sweet. So instead of just this, it's like more symbolization of like joining families together. But yeah, it's definitely seen a resurgence, and I really like it as well. I think it's quite a sweet touch.
Tell us about your current duties. So you've been to the warehouse, or you do spend time in the warehouse where things are created. What do your duties encompass?
Okay, so I work in the warehouse. I did work there fully for the first while that I worked in McGregor McDuff, and now I work in a separate office because we're going under a bit of a renovation. My duties, I do all of the content for the company, so all of our online content, and I edit the offline content. The biggest project I've had at McGregor and McDuff is writing the clan history of all the clans that we have that's going to be rolled out at some point in the future on the website. But that's been the biggest one. And then I've just genuinely finished last night my own mini podcast series.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. a mini podcast series about clan history. So there's one about the myths and legends, one about the ghost stories, and one about clan feuds.
Is it going to be like a series or a podcast with a few episodes, or what are your plans for it, and what's the name of it?
It's just called the McGregor and McDuff podcast, because I thought if it does go well, then we can revisit it and we can explore different themes within it. It is 3 episodes. Like I said, there's one about clan feuds, one about myths and legends, and one about ghost stories. But that's basically, we want to not just promote us, but also promote Scotland and heritage. And that's basically what my job is.
That sounds pretty dreamlike. So you're already a fan of Scotland. You want to help, you want to work in Scotland, you want to help promote it, and you love it. And working for a company like McGregor and McDuff, it sounds like the perfect job.
Yeah, it's pretty dreamy. I'm a little bit smug about my job. I try not to talk about it too much.
Yeah, well, why not? Why not? You are in Scotland, so I mean.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really funny that the person that's doing this within the company is, I'm not Scottish, and I actually don't have Scottish roots either. I'm English with Irish roots. But yeah, it's pretty dreamy. I love it. I love how much I've learned through it, especially because I grew up in England and I didn't get to learn much about Scottish history until I started this job, and it's been so fascinating.
How do you encompass all of your duties under one title?
Content specialist.
Ah, and you already shared that with us. Thank you. We know about your role in MacGregor and Macduff. Tell us a little bit about the company and how long it's been around, how it developed, when it started, etc.
Okay, so MacGregor and Macduff has been around for 30 years. It started in 1977, I'm sure. I will get in such trouble if I'm wrong about this. if not, it was 79. But my directors bought the company 15 years ago. It's owned now by three Italian brothers called Gerald, Dominic and David Capaldi. We started out just being the one shop in Glasgow. And then it became one shop in Edinburgh. And once it was sold on, this was before the Capaldi's time, once it was sold on, it was just kept in the west of Scotland. So we have two shops in Glasgow, one in Prestwick, which is on the west coast of Scotland. And now we have a pop-up shop in London as well, which we have fortnightly every other weekend.
That's something I see even here locally in our city, which is not a massive metropolis, although growing. Can you describe to people what a pop-up shop is? Because those I see more and more.
Oh yeah, of course. So our one works very differently to others that I've known. So the idea is that a designer will go to a big city like London, and they will have basically rent a space and they have their shop there. Ours is by appointment only because it's a fitting service, but sometimes it is just to showcase the best of the clothes. We have had such great experiences from it, and a lot of really interesting people. Not to say our Scottish customers aren't also interesting, but the clientele that we've had from London has been very interesting, and a lot more people actually out with Scotland are interested in connecting with their Scottish heritage. I think we kind of take for granted here how much Scotland is loved, I guess. But yeah, so every other weekend, about two or three members of staff go and open a shop in Shoreditch.
So you mentioned a lot of things are kind of taken for granted, and it's not any kind of malicious thing. It's just, it's when you have beauty at your back door and you see it every day, it's easy to just, it's part of your life. You know, it's easy to just not notice it. You become blind to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. When I lived in Scotland, I did not take it for granted because I was there for a year, but, and I've been back a few times, but, I never, you know, I wasn't raised there. I wasn't born and raised there. But when you live somewhere as beautiful as the coast of Northern California, I appreciated the beauty absolutely every day I could go to work and look over the city and see the ocean. It was gorgeous, but it was something like I would have friends or family coming into town and they would say, "Oh yeah, we did this and this and this, and we wanted to go to the beach." And I was like, "Oh, that's awesome," because I saw it, but I had to make concerted effort to visit the beach.
Absolutely.
I saw it all the time, and it wasn't that I didn't appreciate it. It just wasn't a priority because I was like, "Oh, you know, that's there. I can go there anytime."
Yeah, totally. I know exactly what you mean with Scotland. I have a friend who I made friends with somebody from America actually through a mutual love for Frightened Rabbit, and she came to visit in December, and she was so enchanted by so much in Glasgow, even just Glasgow, that I'm used to it. I just see it all the time. I don't think anything of it. She even loved that when you walk to the end of my street, you can see hills and mountains, which again, I'm used to. It's just part of my everyday. And I think we're all like that. Like we are I'm about a half hour drive away from Loch Lomond, and I don't think anything of it. Even though it's Loch Lomond, it's pretty incredible.
As someone who also loves Scotland, tell us about some of the places that are your favorite to visit in Scotland.
Okay, well, Loch Lomond is actually one of them. Loch Lomond is absolutely beautiful, and the town next to Loch Lomond, Balloch, is also pretty stunning. I didn't grow up in, so when I moved to Scotland, I didn't move to Glasgow. I moved to a seaside town called Largs.
Oh, yes. I've been there. Oh, oh nice. Yes. I do know Largs.
So I didn't like living there because I am just such a city person. But to go back and visit is really quite special. It is so beautiful. And there's so much when you're a teenager that you definitely take for granted because you don't care about sights and stuff like that. But within Largs, if you walk for about 45 minutes from my mum's house, there's a waterfall. And if you walk in the other direction, there's these beautiful woods that I love going to with my mum's dog. Edinburgh is also really beautiful. I think what I love as well, I mean, Glasgow's obviously my favourite, but what I love as well is the contrast in Scotland for such a small country. Each town feels very different to the last one, in my experience. I'm sure lots of natives won't agree.
I know that different areas have, maybe not full-on languages, but, you know, different, I guess you might even go so far as call them dialects. So,
oh, yeah, totally.
So it's not just the, obviously, accents are different. And then, of course, vocabulary, they can have their own specialized or local word for something. So I don't think it's too far off to say, to make that statement, because historically people were much more isolated, right, in their groups, yeah, because they didn't have cars, they didn't have internet to hear other people, see other people, and I mean it's becoming much more international these days, obviously, but it is. I've noticed the same. You know, when you travel to different places, you notice the differences, and it's even better because it's not just one Scotland, there's like a million Scotlands.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree with that. You even find it if you go to different parts of Glasgow. It's so interesting because it really is such a small country with such a small population. The differences are just quite brilliant, really.
So what would you like to communicate to Outlander fans? Obviously, McGregor and Macduff has the tartan and the heritage and the kilt making, the kilt purchasing thing covered. What would you want to share to Outlander fans who are either in Scotland or might be visiting Scotland and considering a visit?
Well, actually, the perfect timing. So I don't know a lot of Outlander fans, but I have spent a lot of time on forums and such, and they do seem very interested naturally in history, and we literally just started a campaign which is what my podcast is for, called The Heritage Collection, and you can connect to your family heritage by like, we have like these clan crest accessories like kilt pins skeindoos and such. And it's really interesting. The other interesting thing is we have on our website at the moment, we have a tartan finder. And even if you don't have a Scottish surname, like I don't have a Scottish surname, and I didn't think that there would be any tartan connected to my name, but it turns out there's actually quite a few. So you can actually find out just through looking on the McGregor Macduff tartan finder, what your tartan would be. And you can get something from us in it as well.
Is there a way for someone who maybe can't make it to Scotland and into a shop to take a peek at your website and look at these same items?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's just mcgregorandmacduff.co.uk. Everything that's available in store is available online.
What is international, not the rate, but what is the policy or international shipping of like a ski and do or something?
Oh, so skeindoos are funny because they are technically weapons. So I don't know. I think some countries are kind of difficult with them, or you at least have to declare what it is. But we deliver all over the world. We have had customers as far as Australia. We have a lot of American customers, which is nice. As far as I know, there aren't really issues with them.
Perfect. So Outlander fans, if you or your loved one or just a friend is interested in anything that Sarah has mentioned, including a ski and do, it's absolutely reachable and orderable and receivable through their website.
You can also, I know that it can be quite complex with the nature of the products that we sell. If you are having any issues or whatever, you can get in touch with us on social media. We are happy to help, and we do have answers to pretty much every question we've had so far.
Is there anything that you and or McGregor and Macduff are working on that will be like a project coming up that will be unveiled in, say, in the coming months or years that you can talk about?
Yeah, well, so next month I have a campaign where I'll be speaking to the people who are behind the scenes with us about how they make our kilts, because we have fully handmade kilts and they still have to be made in the traditional way. So I'll be doing that. It's kind of Meet the Makers thing, but we'll also be having a series on how tartans were originally made, because they used to be made from the plants and the flowers in the area that they were made. So, like, say around Largs, that's all like farmland. So the tartans around that area that were created were quite brown and green, like very earthy. So that kind of thing is what we'll be doing. And I think we might have a new tartan coming out soon. So don't quote me on that, maybe. our last tartan came out 18 months ago.
Is it something that the company tries to do, like once a year, every 2 years? Or is it just something that, as it can be developed?
It's kind of both. We have made a valiant effort to be as one step ahead of the game as possible and as innovative as possible, because as much as we do value and love the tradition and heritage of kilts, there's always room to modernize it a little bit. That's exactly why we started making navy kilts, the Iron Navy. So it's kind of to go with trends, kind of to be ahead of trends, but also to keep us relevant as well. Yeah, it's a big mix, but we don't really do anything just for the sake of doing it.
Let's hear a little bit more about yourself. The store is fascinating because of what it offers and who it reaches and how it's working to include and involve the history and always develop, as you're saying, releasing more tartans, but always having keeping history in mind. You say that you were not raised in Scotland. What brought you? You said, did you come with your family?
Oh, I did. So I'm from Liverpool, and my stepdad used to work on in the Merchant Navy, I think, and there's a port in Liverpool. So he came off the port one night and met my mum, and they were together for 4 years before we moved up to Scotland. And my plan was, I moved here when I was 13, so I was pretty grumpy about the whole thing. I was pretty grumpy about everything, if I'm honest. My plan was to move back as soon as I could. It was just, I was so resentful of the move, of Scotland, of everything to do with it. And then I sort of fell in love with it, and I can't imagine moving back. And when people ask if I'm Scottish, I usually just say yes, because over the past 10 or so years, I've just fallen in love. I just think it's such a beautiful country, and I think the people, I've lived in Glasgow for a decade. So when I say the people, I do mostly mean Glasgow, but the people are just so wonderful that I cannot imagine living anywhere else.
Yeah, Glasgow is one of my favorite cities as well. It's kind of like maybe not a home base, but it's where we typically fly into and then stay at before we leave, and we have friends around there, and it's always kind of coming off the plane and into the airport, it's always like that I'm here kind of thing. And yeah, and we've had nothing but the people of Glasgow have been nothing but just amazing to us. So whenever we've had the opportunity to travel there.
It is such a special city. And the other thing that I love about Scotland is that I'm never too far away from the countryside. So I never really feel suffocated by living. I mean, Glasgow is a small city anyway, but I never feel suffocated by living in the city. I have disappeared to the countryside quite a few times now just to recharge, and it isn't even the trip, it's just an hour on the train and I'm completely somewhere else.
As we close out, tell us about your favorite type of day, whether it includes a work day and then getting away, or whether it includes, as you said, like a short train ride somewhere for maybe a picnic or just a walk in the woods.
Okay, so my favorite days are, actually, I grew up with somebody called Greg, and he's now my like oldest friend, and as we've grown up, we've stopped having silly nights getting drunk together, and we actually go on mini adventures around Scotland. So he comes and picks me up in the morning, and we have sandwiches together in the car, and then we drive to usually a castle, and we'll look around the castle. The best one that we went to was the first one we went to, which is called Doon Castle. And that's actually, they have an Outlander tour there. But we do something like that. And then after that, we go to the closest sort of park and we just wander around or need a lock. Anything that involves exploring the outdoors in a sort of non-organized way is ideal. Like being able to say, oh, that place looks really cool, let's just go there, is ideal. And in terms of like on a sort of grander scale, being able to just go, actually going to the beach in Scotland is one of my favorite things to do. I know that Scotland isn't the place you think of when you think of beaches, but going to a really quite windy beach with a big coat on and fish and chips and a hot chocolate is just ideal. And the beach that I usually go to looks onto the Isle of Arran, so it is absolutely beautiful. And it's only about half an hour away on the train.
Oh, I've been to Arran, I think at least twice. Loved it.
Oh, really? I've actually not been to Arran.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Back in the, I think I just pulled an Irish. It's gorgeous. weird sounds come out of me sometimes without me meaning to. When I was there, it was quite a few years ago, but when I was living in Scotland, I was studying there and I was there for a year. And then I went to Arran with a friend and we stayed there. I think we even camped there for a little bit, but it was in, I think, like the August time period. But we, at that point, and I may have tried it before I got to the island, but this is back when they had a liqueur called Holy Isle. They don't make it anymore. And when I learned that, I was gutted. It was like Bailey's, but it was Scottish, and it was a little bit lighter. And of course, it had a different taste because it was a different whiskey, but it was a whiskey liqueur. It was so amazing. And it was named Holy Isle after the Holy Isle there, which of course is an island with Buddhist monks.
Okay.
But yeah, Arran is absolutely gorgeous.
I do want to see it. There's so much of Scotland I want to see. I'm absolutely desperate to see the Isle of Skye.
So are we. Fascinating to hear that you weren't brought up in Scotland and that you moved there and that you changed from this, you know, understandably resistant young teenager. I think all teens would be resistant because you're changing, you're uprooting your life, and that's a very hard time.
Yeah.
You've come from that and you've matured, and now, you know, like a 180, you're in love with this place and have the good fortune to work for this great company and help spread the good news, if you will, about Scotland to a lot of people from all over the world.
Yeah, totally. I am quite surprised. I've said quite a few times that 13-year-old me would be utterly disgusted with where my life has gone. But I absolutely just, yeah, I just fell in love with it. And I think like the longer I live here, the more, the other thing is I always plan to like to just always travel. And the longer I live here, the more rooted I feel to the country, which I love as well. It's so nice that I think it's my favorite thing I've ever been proven wrong on, to be honest. Moving here was pretty much the best thing that could have happened to me.
That's a very good question we'll have to keep in mind for other interviews. What's the very best thing you've been proven wrong in or on? That's a very good question because that's deep. That makes you think.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to steal that. Okay, well, we do respect your time, and we are absolutely honored that you joined us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure. So again, thank you so much, Sarah Louise Kelly, for joining us here on the Outlander podcast. It's been a pleasure to speak with you and learn about McGregor and McDuff, absolutely, but also your experience has also been fascinating to hear about.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been brilliant. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward
Thank you to our
next
generous partner,
episode.
Zencastr, who offers high fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.